So I was going to talk about the firstborn today and about the idea of the right hand and the left hand and how Israel is a firstborn and the idea of being adopted by Yahweh through the Spirit. Then I was going to talk about something else. I had three things. I was like, ooh, and he was bringing me along the path and before and I'm like, ooh, I couldn't wait. And then it came time to sit to the computer and blank. This probably fits more to what we're talking about today. Spiritual warfare. We're in that season where spiritual warfare is not a question of whether it's going to happen. It's more a question of when, how, and how long. And again, spiritual warfare is very different than physical. And a lot of spiritual warfare comes down to some of the hardest things we do. Some of the simplest commands, but the hardest things, like, oh, say, wait. Hope. Because we see the world crumbling. And my goodness, what's going to happen next? To talk about this, I want to get into this, a bigger picture today of spiritual warfare. You might say studying it from a historical point of view. Now, when I say historical, I mean scriptural. So we're going to go back to Exodus 3, 17 and 18. These first few slides you would have seen before. Then it came to pass, when Pharaoh had let the people go, that Elohim did not lead them by the way of the Philistines. This is not chapter 3. That's okay. Although that was near. For Elohim said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. So Elohim led the people around by the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea. And the children of Israel went up in orderly ranks out of the land of Egypt. Now, we brought this up. Need you to hold on to this thought. That point, that he knew that there was Philistines there. That when they see what? War. I need you to focus that they see war. That they would basically run away. They go back to being slaves. And this is not slaves to Yahweh or a bondservant, as Paul talked about. But we're talking about a slave to the enemy. And you can get to a point where you are so focused, no matter in any situation, you can get so used to it. There are cases where people are abducted for long periods of time. And they find themselves, when they're freed, wanting to go back to it. Why? Because they grew up there. That's all they know. They don't know how to live outside of that environment. Same way here. And in reality, so with us. But I need you to hold on to specifically that see the war. Thank you. Exodus 13. So here's my map again. Remember, we're starting at Ramses. So here's Ramses here. Again, the Egyptians would be up here. The Israelites here. This is the way of the Philistines. There's Jerusalem. That's a shortcut. But if they were to go the way of the Philistines, he knew they would run away. Then run back to Egypt. So Yahweh, of course, took them the other way. The long way. The way that we all are going. So hold on to that. There was a shortcut. Yahweh could have taken the shortcut, but he knew better. So he's going to take them the long way. He knew them better than they knew themselves. Exodus 14, 10, 11. And Pharaoh drew near. The children of Israel, what? Lifted their eyes. They saw. And behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were afraid. And the children of Israel cried out to Yahweh. And they said to Moses, because there was no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt with us to bring us out of Egypt? And again, guess what? It proves the point. This is not the Philistines. These are the Egyptians. They're like, if we're going to die, we could have died there. Exodus 14, 12. Is this not the word we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it is better for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness. Better to serve the enemy than to die out here. Exodus 14, 13 and 14. And Moses said to the people, now, before I get to this, he knew that they were so afraid. There wasn't much he could ask of them in regard to a commandment right now. So as you read this, I want you to realize what he is commanding them to do, thus to obey. Ready? Do not be afraid. Stand still. And what? See the salvation of Yahweh. That's all he asked them to do. Don't be afraid. Don't move. Which he, Yahweh, will accomplish for you today. The Egyptians whom you see today, you shall not see no more forever. Yahweh will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. Two simple commands. Do not be afraid. Be still. Now you know what? That's something they could do. At this moment, if he'd said, charge them, probably not. But he knew that. So realize the simple commands. Now, let's be honest. Do not be afraid. It's a little harder. Because while we're standing there, we're probably trembling. You know, our hands. But we can try. And again, stand still. Now, I brought this question up, but I don't think I completely answered it. And that's where we're going to talk about today. If Yahweh knew that they would return to Egypt if they faced the Philistines and saw war, then why did he have them face Pharaoh and his army? Why do that? Now, I don't want an answer yet, because we got to go on a journey to find this answer. This is not an easy answer, nor is it a single word answer. Which thus leads us back to Genesis chapter 3. Our first interaction between the enemy, Hasatan, and man. Look for similarities as we go. Now the serpent was more cunning than the beast of the field, which Yahweh Elohim had made. And he said to the woman, has Elohim indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? Now, what's intriguing is he starts off with a question for confusion. Now, I don't have time to go through all the verses. Go back and check. Yahweh says, I have made all of these trees good for food. And at that moment, he did not say that the tree of knowledge of good and evil couldn't be eaten, nor was it not pleasant to the eyes, nor was it not good for food. It is until later that he says, oh, and by the way, you can't eat of this tree. So part of what the enemy's doing is he's going to bring in confusion. Did he not say that you couldn't eat of any of these trees? Now, realize the confusion is to get you distracted from focusing on all the trees you can eat. Now focus on the one tree you can't. Okay? All the trees? No, he didn't say that. So now your mind is not thinking about all the trees you can eat. It's to focus on the one tree you can't. Hold on to that. Genesis 3:2-3. And the woman said to the serpent, "Oh, we may eat the fruit of the trees of the garden. But the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, Elohim has said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die." So now she's focused on the tree she cannot eat nor touch. Now we, of course, all know that there was no commandment to not touch. That was an addition. Man's addition. I say it's man's addition because we know Adam was around when the scripture was given, and then he was split into Ish and Isha, man and woman. And now woman says, oh, by the way, don't touch it. Well, she wasn't there to hear it the first time. And she didn't say, she didn't go, he said not to eat of it and I think I shouldn't touch it. No, she said specifically that Yahweh said not to do either, which means this is what she's heard. Now, this is a scary thing in this world because when man adds to the commands, children do the first thing we always want them to do, they try and test those commands. Does that really burn me? Ah! You mean the fence is really, electrical? Right? Are we telling the truth? The serpent said to the woman, "You will not surely die. For Elohim knows that in the day that you eat it, your what? Your eyes will be opened and you will be like Elohim, knowing good and evil." Now, he's playing off our curiosity. Oh, Elohim knows. He's also playing off the point of a lie. Like Yahweh doesn't know what's best for us. Which again, for a child, they don't usually think parents know what's best for them. They think they know what's best for them. Genesis 3, 6, 7. Now before I get to that, it says that he would be like Elohim. Remember, we were made in his image. But even in that, Yahweh's trying to transform us into his image. It's a process. This is the shortcut, is what Hasatan's saying. Remember how there was the way of the Philistines was a shortcut to the land, but Yahweh knew they couldn't take that? This is the shortcut. Just eat of the fruit. You'll know it all. Genesis 3, 6, and 7. So when the woman saw the tree was good for food, she what? She saw. And it was pleasant to the eyes. And the tree was desirable to make one wise. She took of the fruit, stop, didn't die, and she ate. She gave to her husband with her and ate. And the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves coverings. They knew they needed atonement. Because now they had sin. And they go, we need atonement. So of course we do what we always do, is we go and make atonement for ourselves. Okay? Now guys, I cannot convey to you how disgusting the opposite of what would be pure this moment is. Our eyes are supposed to be open the moment we find Yahweh's love. When we stop becoming blind to His truth and the world around them. The moment their eyes were opened, they were opened because of a conversation with the enemy. This is the opposite. This is where conviction comes first. Now, it's also intriguing is they are no longer obeying Yahweh's voice. They're obeying the voice of Hasatan. And when it says that her eyes were opened, it's when, let's say I'm having a conversation and I'm trying to get her to see the situation the way I see it. And when she sees it the same way I see it, then we both agree. But in the end, she just took my opinion. This is what happened here. Genesis 3:8-9. And they heard the sound of Yahweh Elohim. Another way is they heard his word walking in the garden in the cool of the day. Notice they didn't see him, they heard. And Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of Yahweh Elohim among the trees of the garden. Then Yahweh Elohim called to Adam and said, "Where are you?" So a direct connection is, guess what? By doing this, did they feel set free? No. Their first reaction is, we need to go and hide from the one person we know who loves us. Where are you? This is 3:10-11. So they said, "I heard your voice in the garden." Guys, listen to this. "And I was afraid." When we were at the Sea of Reeds, were they afraid of Yahweh? No. They were afraid of the enemy. Look at how this has been flipped. They're afraid of Yahweh. "Because I was uncovered and I hid myself." And he said, "Who told you you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree which I commanded you that you should not eat?" Is that what happened? Genesis 3:13-15. "And Yahweh Elohim said to the woman, 'What is this you have done?' The woman said, 'The serpent deceived me and I ate.'" This is 15. Yahweh says, "I will put enmity," that's hatred or division, "between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed, and he shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel." Okay? Enmity means separation between the seed of one and the other. Now, what I want you to realize, we start the whole story off in a great place. Yahweh and his children, they're communing together, they're spending time together, and the relationship is growing. And because of this act with the enemy, now they're going to go and hide. He's now created enmity between Yahweh and his children. Yahweh goes, "Oh, all right, I don't like this, so I'm going to put up a fence, enmity between your seed and their seed. I don't want this to happen again." Okay? Listen to this. This is Isaiah 28:15. "Because you have said, 'We have made a covenant with death and with the grave, we are in agreement. When the overflowing scourge passes through, it will not come on us, for we have made lies our refuge, and in our falsehood we have hidden ourselves.'" Sound familiar? So here's the reality. When you start to obey the enemy, you're now not in covenant with Yahweh, because covenant means love and it means obedience. So when you come into obedience to the enemy, you've now made covenant with him and with death and with the grave. You've made a covenant. You've sold yourself to that by your actions. Well, Isaiah 28:15 continues in 17 and 18. Listen to this. "I will make justice the measuring line and righteousness the plummet." Listen to this. "The hail will sweep away the refuge of lies." Now, where did hail come into play? Egypt? The point here is the hail was meant to clean out the lies. And the waters will overflow the hiding place. Your covenant with death will be annulled, and your agreement with the grave will not stand. So when this happens, he is going to annul our covenant with the grave and with death. Now, wasn't Pharaoh Pharaoh be just happy to know that he was literal the grave and death that that Yahweh was annulling the covenant with. So guys, here we are. We're stuck. But Yahweh's going to annul that, right? Genesis 4, 6 to 7. So Yahweh said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your countenance fallen?" I'm going to stop for a moment. Countenance is the same word as face. Why is your face turned away from me? This is what the phrasing means. Why are you angry and why won't you look at me? If you do well, will you not be accepted? If you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. Now, that's a simple summation of the commands. If you do the commands, will you not be accepted by Yahweh? Yes. If you do not do the commands, sin is sitting at the door waiting to come in and take you. But you should rule over him. Genesis 4:8. Now Cain talked with Abel his brother. And it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and killed him. Now I brought this up. Cain means possessions. Abel, the breath of God. So possessions, the person who would not give his best, killed the breath of God when he kills Abel. This sort of connects to what Patrick was bringing up and what the song said today, that our obsession with our things can kill the spirit that's within us. Genesis 4:14. How bad is it? "Surely you have driven me out this day from the face of the ground. I shall be hidden from your face." Guys, he turned his face from Yahweh to act this. Yahweh goes, now basically, I'm going to turn my face from you. And by the way, now I'm separating you. They were separated from the garden, right? And the ground was cursed. Now that Cain's being separated from his entire family and from the earth, because nothing would ever come up from the earth because of the sin. What's important here is this sin was the innocent blood of Abel that was poured into the earth that caused it to be cursed. So that means that blood would have to go into the earth again to fix it. Now, in the midst of this, still seems really bad, right? But Yahweh can fix anything, right? Genesis 4:25 through 26. Listen to this. "And Adam knew his wife again. And she bore a son and named him Seth," which means what? Compensation. "For Elohim has appointed another seed for me instead of Abel," the breath, "whom possessions Cain killed. And as for Seth, to him also a son was born, and he named him Enosh," man. "Then men began to call on" who? "The name of Yahweh." So this is interesting. So another child is born, which is called compensation, to take the place of the son who was killed. And compensation, this child, then teaches his child, of which now men are now, are they calling on the enemy? No, they're calling upon Yahweh. You see how the situation's completely been turned around? Wow. Do we think the enemy can just let that go on? No. Genesis 6, 1 and 2. "Now it came to pass when the men began to multiply in the face of the earth, and the daughters were born to them. The sons of Elohim saw the daughters of men, and they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves of whom they choose." Now guys, this is not go up and court them. this is my wife. Who they choose. These are, we believe, beings from the heavenlies that have come down, sons of God, and they've mixed. It's a mixture of heavenly seed and earthly seed. Now, there was supposed to be enmity between them. Remember the whole point with Eve? I'm putting enmity between your seed and theirs. Well, that enmity, that hatred, that distance has now been crossed. So where men are calling on the name of Yahweh, here comes a plan. Well, I'll come down and I'll fix that. Genesis 6, 3 to 4, and Yahweh says, my spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants on the earth in those days and also afterward. When the sons of Elohim came into the daughters of men, they bore children to them, those who were the mighty men of old, men of renown. So where Yahweh now had men, seed, calling upon him, now the enemy, through this, has created his own seed. Men of renown, men of power. Genesis 6, 5 to 6. Then what? Yahweh saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil. How often? Continually. And Yahweh was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. Because you know what? These men of renown became an infection that infected even the sons they were calling on the name of Yahweh. Six, seven to nine. So Yahweh said, I will destroy man who I've made or created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping things, birds of the air, for I am sorry I have made them. But Noah found mercy, grace, in what? The eyes of Yahweh. This is the genealogy of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations. Noah walked with Elohim. That should compare back to Adam walking with Elohim, right? So, you know what? He found one man. Well, he started this entire journey with one man. And the earth, which has now been cursed twice, the first sin, by the sweat of your brow you'll bring forth crop, and in Cain's sin, oh, by the way, for Cain's descendants, they have to go out, and they cannot bring anything forth from the earth. So Yahweh cleanses the whole earth with water. This is the proverbial huge mikveh. But in a mikveh, some of us, when we go into the water, we can come back out of the water. Only Noah and his family came out of the water. Realize with water, he killed them. The same type of water he kills all the Egyptians under. Another mikveh. Some walking through fine, others killed under the waters. So he cleanses the earth. It needs to be cleansed. So where do we start again? Genesis 9, 20 and 22. And Noah began to be a what? A farmer. Sound like Adam? And he planted a vineyard. And he drank of the wine. And he was drunk. He became what? Uncovered. Wasn't there a passage in there with Adam about being naked? In his tent. And Ham, the father of Canaan, saw the nakedness of his father and told his brothers outside. Guys, we just got off Yahweh restoring everything again. Noah has become this garden again. He's restoring it. And what's going to happen again? the enemy has to come in again and spoil everything. Now, guys, there's a bigger plan, and you're going to see the plan in a minute, but these are little steps to that plan of the enemy, too. 9:25 of Genesis. Then he said, "Cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants he shall be to his brethren." And when he blesses the other two sons, he makes Canaan their servant. So now Canaan has to go off. He's somewhat separated from all of them, cursed. We also have the Nephilim, right? They're still out there. Even after the flood, it says that they were out there. Can't kill off the Nephilim. They're always out there. Genesis 10:19. Now listen to this. And the border of the Canaanites was from Sidon, as you go toward Gerar, as far as where? Gaza. And you go down towards Sodom and Gomorrah, that's where Canaan was also, Adma and Zeboim, as far as Lasha. Now I need you to hold on to this idea of Sidon, Gaza specifically, and Sodom and Gomorrah, so we know where they got their wonderful traditions from. Listen to this, Exodus 3:8. So I have come down, this is Yahweh, to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up from the land to a good and large land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the what? Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and Jebusites. So who's already living in the land? The Canaanites and all those connected to them. Aren't these the cursed ones? Aren't their behavior that's been put aside? They're all in the land? Now, why in the world would they be? They could go anywhere else in the world. Why do they have to go to the land? Because there's a greater plan going on we don't see. Numbers 13:31 and 32. But the men who had gone up with them said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land, which they spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw are men of great what? Stature." We saw these huge people. Numbers 13:33. And we saw giants. Wait a minute. Are we saying at this point that the promised land, the land Yahweh wants to give to his people, are basically filled with all of the cursed ones we've already seen prior? The Canaanites cursed, they just happened to go and live in the land. The Philistines with the Nephilim go and live in the land. Now whose plan would that be? We saw the giants, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and we were in their sight. And basically they're saying, you know, we were nothing compared to them. We saw, do you guys see the fear in their eyes? The same fear we see with Pharaoh? Numbers 14:1 and 2. So all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. Sounds just like when they were at the Red Sea. And we, of course, don't do anything like this. We don't just like, the first thing we do is we don't just start complaining. We don't have to say things like, "Yahweh, why again?" We don't do that, right? Isn't it incredible how fast? It's like, you know, we hear cars 0 to 60. 0 to complaint is faster than that. Far faster than 0 to 60. And you know what? It only takes a little thing that gets off. And you know what? We don't forget all the times where things didn't go well. So all of them are already stacked on top, and this just gets put on top of that one. And this might be like a minor little issue, but our reaction has to be equal all the other problems on top of that. I don't know about you, I'm just telling you about what I know myself. They lifted their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron. And the congregation said, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, or only if we had died in the wilderness. Why die going in there? Numbers 14, 3 and 4. Why? That's a popular question with us, isn't it? Why has Yahweh brought us to the land to fall by the sword that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? So they said to one another, let us select a leader and return to Egypt. Are we not smarter than him? Does he not know wisdom? Now, guys, I bring this up. I've got 3 or 4 maps in a row. So, Philistines, what's the name of this first town here? Where have we heard that before? Wasn't that somewhere where the Canaanites were living? By the way, if I kept the map going up, you'd go up here, Tyre and Sidon would be north of that. Oh, by the way, this is what the land supposedly looked like. Here's the wonderful Philistines. Here's the Perizzites, the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and all of them. They have completely filled the land. This is the land that Joshua gets to go into. Now, you'd think Yahweh would have gotten rid of the Philistines, the giants, when he brought the flood. This is the land after Joshua goes in. Notice what's still here. And there's Gaza. This is later in Israel. And look here. Are you ready? And this is today. They're still there. They're still there. I showed you pre-Joshua, showed you post-Joshua, David, and now I've shown you a modern map today. And this is where a lot of the problems are happening with Israel today. Interesting how the map doesn't change that much. And we may sit back and ask, why leave them? We'll get to that in a minute. Genesis 15, I think, is a big picture to what we're talking about today. I don't have time to put all the verses. We're just going to do a quick summary and go back and check. This is where Yahweh shows up to Abram. And he says, you know what, Abram? I want you to look at the stars in the sky. I'm going to be your shield, and I'm going to be your what? Great reward. Just like all the stars in the sky, so your children will be. And Abram's answer to that is, but how will I attain it? Because he sees in himself insufficiency. I can't measure up to your standard, Yahweh. Yahweh says, you know what? Why don't you go cut a few animals for me? After he cut his animals, he basically has him be still because he falls into a deep sleep. Don't be afraid. And then Yahweh picks up his end of the covenant and Abram's and walks between the animals. And while he walks between the animals, he says, the land of Canaan, of which the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hittites, and all the Jebusites that live in, I will give to you and your children forever. So what happened in Genesis 15? promise made to Abram long ago that this land would be his and his children would be like the stars of the sky. So that's Yahweh's plan. I feel like Hasatan has his own plan. No, I'll put my people in the promised land. Now, guys, when I talk about people, please be careful. When I speak about people, I talk about culture. I'm not talking about individuals. Yahweh hates traditions of cultures. He does not hate specific individuals as a whole. He is the God of some nations. Abraham's going to be the father of all nations. Now, remember that question? If Yahweh knew that they would return to Egypt if they faced the Philistines and they saw war, then why did he have them face Pharaoh and his army? Think about all that you've now read. You guys see any consistencies? Here's one. You will not enter Yahweh's promise without going through the enemy. Will absolutely not. And Yahweh, Hasatan had a perfect plan. I'm going to put all his enemies in the land he has to take them to. All right, guys, I got three slides of lessons, and then we're going to do two verses and we're done. But guys, these are lessons that as I was typing them, I'm like, I gotta let this sink in, because they haven't sunk in completely to me yet. All right, here we go. Spiritual warfare comes down to choice. Who are we listening to? Who are we learning from? And our obedience deals with love and covenants. Thus, through our actions, we choose our Elohim. That means when we go off to make our own plan, you've chosen your Elohim, and it's not Yahweh. You're sowing fig leaves together. So again, choice, listening, learning, obeying. Yahweh offers us life, and he desires us to love him unconditionally, to be servants in his house. Now, guys, that means that he expects you to love him when he does something you don't want him to. Satan offers us death and desires to rule over us. Compare the two. Hasatan wants to make Yahweh out to be a liar. Guys, you're like, a liar? You know what? If they don't go take the land from the Canaanites, the Perizzites and all them, do they not make Yahweh a liar that he promised Abram that land? Did he not make it a liar to Eve by saying, oh no, Yahweh knows when you eat of this tree. He doesn't want you to do it. Satan uses our sight and our focus against us. Every attack, to one degree or another, is a point to get you to stop counting your blessings and count the things that are going wrong in your life. And that automatically changes our attitude. From, we become tense. We focus on all of those things. We count, oh man, he did this to me. He did that to me. He did this to me. Oh my gosh, I never get this. We count them. Much of the battle is set to separate our flesh from our spirit. And the goal is the flesh should serve the spirit. That's the goal of the flesh. The sad part is quite often our spirit serves our flesh, with the flesh being in charge. Probably why he wanted the ear pierced. The flesh had to be pierced again. Yahweh does not take away Satan or our flesh, but teaches us to walk with it and find victory. So you keep asking the question, why in the world didn't he take the Nephilim away? If he took the Nephilim away, you would not be the strong individual you are today. If he didn't have you face Pharaoh, you would not be the person you have. You would not have the faith you have today. You would not, nor would you depend on Yahweh. Why would you keep going to Yahweh if you didn't need him? But we have to learn to walk with it and find victory. But you know what? It's going to be victory in the midst of defeats. It's not like people want to portray that, I just walk in victory every single day. We're lying to ourselves because you know what? We're still sinning. Hasatan is focused on the battle. Yahweh is focused on the war. See, one battle means nothing. And that's why when you fall, Yahweh's not as concerned about you falling. He's concerned about you getting up. Hasatan's focused on you falling. But with Yahweh, it's not the matter of times you fall, but whether you get up and try and change. Satan plays in our dreams, our expectations, our fears, our lack of patience. He'd like to give us the easy way instead of the hard, narrow path that Yahweh wants to take us on. Whether that's eating of the tree, whether it's going the way of the Philistines, no matter. Because you know what? His goal is to get you to go back to Egypt. His goal is not to get you to the land. Hasatan wants you to go back to Egypt. He wants you back enslaved. He doesn't want you free going off on your own, nor does he want you to become a servant of Yahweh. Think of the prodigal son in regard to what was taught today. He doesn't come back going, Father, may I be a son. No, his prayer is, if I could just be a servant in your house. Could I just be that? Satan seeks to reveal our nakedness. Yahweh seeks to clothe us. Every one of those stories. Last page of lessons. Yahweh desires a covenant with us to spend time with us. He actually loves us and wants us for who we are. All of that terrible, dirty, hairy, I'm not even talking about myself, smelly individual. He wants us for who we are. Hasatan desires just to separate us from Yahweh. He's not concerned about us. He just doesn't want us over with him. It's a jealousy match. I want more on my side. I want them on my side. Satan sees us as the weak link in Yahweh's plan and seeks to exploit us to make Yahweh's promises null and void. And I really need to let that one sink in. Remember, even in the case of Abram, Yahweh goes, you sleep, you be still, you sit, I'm going to take both ends of this. Hasatan knows we're the weak link. He can't get Yahweh to stop. He's got to ask permission. But he can try and get us to stop. Yahweh frees us and teaches us to rule over our flesh. Remember that door? We're supposed to rule over Hasatan. Rule over sin. Quite often we let him rule over us. But that's part of the process of him teaching us to rule over it. Satan will always stand in the way of us obeying and thus fulfilling Yahweh's word and plan. Everything Yahweh has planned, Hasatan's going to be in the way. You're going to have to face him. He knows that. Yahweh knows that. So you know what? Like the greatest trainer, forget Rocky. Like the greatest trainer, Yahweh goes, I got to build up their spiritual muscles. I've got to build up their endurance. I've got to be able to build up their reliance on me that when I tell them, they're going to believe me. I've got to build them up because I know the enemy's coming to break them down. I thought about playing Rocky's music, but I didn't bring it today. All right, guys, I'm ending just with 2 Corinthians. And I want to see how 2 Corinthians wraps this all back up to the beginning. Okay? This is 5:1-3. For we know that our earthly house, this tent, is destroyed. We have a building from Elohim. A house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this we groan. How many times did the children of Israel groan? We groan in our flesh because we're still here struggling with it. Struggling with the covering around us. Look at this. Earnestly desiring to be clothed with our habitation which is from heaven. If indeed, having been clothed, we shall not be found naked. 4:5. For we who are in the tent groan, being burdened, not because we want to be unclothed, no, but to be what? Further clothed, that mortality may be swallowed up by life. For he who has prepared us for this very thing is Elohim, who also has given us the Spirit as a guarantee. My Spirit will not strive with them forever. And finally, 5, 6, and 7. For we are always confident, knowing that while we are in the home, in the body, we are absent from Yahweh. For we walk by, not by sight. Every one of those problems we saw, they saw the Egyptians. They saw the giants. They saw the Canaanites. But the saw is the part of our flesh that causes us to go straight to complaint. Guys, spiritual warfare is not going to stop. But just like Yahweh walked between those animals with both flames of fire, and he used sinful people to make all his promises come true, he will use us to do the same. He will use us to do the same. And the warfare will have the same ending. Baruch Hashem. Yevarecha Yahweh vayishmerecha. Ke Yahweh tipendegei tipetecha. May Yahweh, Him only, may He bless you and keep you. Yar Yahweh panavidecha vihunecha, ke Yahweh agas urostro spenecer sobre ti ite ortoges madad. May Yahweh's face shine upon you and be gracious to you. Yisi Yahweh panavidecha viseim lecha shalom. Que Yahweh muestre su rostro sobre ti y te concede su paz. And when Yahweh's face turns towards you, may He give you that perfect peace. Shabbat shalom.